All right, so let's dive into cloud platform and infrastructure security today. We know you're prepping for that CCSP exam, so we're going through some key excerpts from a study guide to get you ready. Get ready to really rethink data protection in the cloud, because it's not just firewalls and intrusion detection anymore.
Yeah, it's a whole new ball game. You're basically teaming up with a cloud service provider, a CSP, and navigating these vulnerabilities that you wouldn't encounter in a traditional setup. Like, have you ever thought about how the physical location of a cloud data center could impact security? Or what happens if the hypervisor itself gets compromised?
Those are great points. Let's start with the shared responsibility model. It's kind of like a partnership, right? But where's the dividing line between what the CSP handles and what falls on me?
Okay, so think of it this way. The CSP is like the landlord. They're responsible for the physical security of the building. So that's the data center itself. Things like physical access controls, environmental monitoring, making sure the power stays on and the place doesn't overheat. They're also responsible for the underlying infrastructure, like keeping the hypervisors patched and secure.
So the physical servers,
Yeah.
the networks within the data center, the hypervisor, that's all in the CSP. But what about my stuff, my data, my applications? Where do I come in?
You're responsible for what's inside your apartment, so to speak. That's where you secure your data, manage user access, and configure the cloud services you're using.
Okay, so if I'm using a platform as a service, like a database in the cloud, then I'm responsible for setting access controls and encrypting my data within that database.
Exactly. You're in control of the security settings for your specific instance, even though the CSP secures the underlying platform.
Got it. Now, the source material dives into several key infrastructure components and mentions different cloud models, like private, public, community, and how the identity of the CSP can actually change depending on the model.
Right. In a private cloud, you might be your own CSP, particularly if it's on-premise. But if you're using AWS or Azure, they become your CSP. But the interesting thing is, regardless of the cloud model, physical security of the data center always falls on the CSP's shoulders.
So whether it's my own server room
Yeah.
or a massive AWS data center, they're responsible for making sure no one unauthorized can physically get in.
Precisely. Think high security facility, guards, cameras, access control systems, the works. And they're responsible for monitoring those systems 24/7.
But as the customer,
Yeah.
I have no control over the physical environment, right?
Correct. You're placing your trust in the CSP's security competence, which is why due diligence during the selection process is critical. Imagine hiring a contractor to build your house. You wouldn't just pick the cheapest option, right? You'd want someone reputable and trustworthy. Choosing a CSP is similar. You're entrusting them with your data and applications.
That's a great point. So let's say I've vetted my CSP and I'm confident in their physical security. What about the network and communication side of things? The source material flags the public internet as a potential vulnerability.
Well, that's because the public internet is inherently less secure than a private network. It's like sending a postcard versus a sealed letter. Anyone could potentially intercept information sent over the public internet. Both the customer and the CSP need to take steps to secure communications.
So what does that look like practically? Is it all on the CSP to make sure my data is safe as it travels to and from their servers?
It's a shared effort. The CSP secures their own network infrastructure and the connections within their data centers, like the links between their servers and storage systems. But you, as the customer, you are responsible for securing the connection from your environment to the CSP's network.
Okay, so what are some tools I can use to do that?
Think secure protocols, HTTPS for web traffic, encrypting data before sending it over the internet, and potentially using VPNs for secure communication channels.
So sending sensitive data over the public internet without encryption is like broadcasting my credit card number on a loudspeaker.
You got it. You need those safeguards to protect your data in transit. Now let's talk about the workhorse of cloud computing, virtualization. The source material digs into this concept because it's essential for understanding how the cloud works.
Yeah, I hear the term hypervisor thrown around a lot. What exactly is it, and why is it so important for security?
The hypervisor is the magic that allows cloud providers to offer those scalable, flexible computing resources we all love. Instead of running applications on dedicated physical servers, they use a hypervisor to create virtual machines, or VMs.
So it's like a digital landlord, carving up a physical server into multiple virtual apartments.
That's a perfect analogy. It allows multiple customers, or tenants, to share the same physical infrastructure, each with their own isolated virtual environment. This is where the concept of multi-tenancy comes into play.
And that's where the security concerns come in, right? If I'm sharing a physical server with other customers, could they potentially snoop on my data?
That's the risk. But it's mitigated by the hypervisor itself. It acts as a barrier between VMs, preventing them from interacting with each other or the underlying hardware. Think of it as soundproof walls and strong locks in our apartment building analogy.
So the hypervisor is crucial for keeping those tenants separated. But what if the hypervisor itself gets compromised? That seems like it would be a disaster.
It's a nightmare scenario. If the hypervisor is compromised, it's game over. An attacker could potentially gain access to all the VMs running on that server.
So who's responsible for making sure that doesn't happen? Is that on the CSP or the customer?
The CSP is ultimately responsible for securing the hypervisor and the entire virtualization layer. They need to implement strong access controls, hardening measures, and regular security audits to make sure the hypervisor isn't a weak link.
Okay, that makes sense. But what about the security of the virtual machines themselves? Is that my responsibility as the customer, or does the CSP handle that too?
That depends on the service model you're using. Infrastructure as a service, IaaS platform as a service, CoSS, or software as a service.
IaaS. So walk me through how the responsibility shifts depending on which service model I'm using.
Okay, so think of IaaS like renting an empty apartment.
Yeah.
The landlord, the CSP, secures the building, but you're responsible for everything inside. You handle patching the operating system, configuring firewalls, and monitoring for suspicious activity.
So it's essentially like managing a physical server, but in a virtualized environment.
Precisely. With PaaS, it's more like renting a furnished apartment. The CSP secures the underlying platform and the tools provided, but you secure your applications and data within that environment.
So I can rearrange the furniture. But I can't tear down walls or mess with the building structure.
Exactly. And finally, with SaaS, it's like staying at a hotel. The CSP is responsible for securing the entire application and infrastructure.
So I just relax and enjoy the amenities without worrying about maintenance or security.
Well, you still need to be mindful of your own actions, like using strong passwords and not clicking on phishing links. But the CSP handles the heavy lifting on the security front.
That's a great way to break it down. So we've covered the physical environment, network communication, and the intricacies of virtualization. But the cloud also introduces some unique risks we need to be aware of, right? The source material mentioned dependence on internet connectivity as one potential vulnerability.
Yeah, that's a big one. If your internet connection goes down, you're cut off from your cloud resources. It's like relying on a bridge to get to work. If the bridge is out, you're stuck.
So what can I do to mitigate that risk?
Redundancy is key. Think backup internet connections, maybe even leveraging multiple cloud providers. Some CSPs also offer direct connect services, which are like building a private road to bypass that bridge altogether.
Interesting. What about the risk of attacks targeting other tenants or the CSP itself? Is it possible for my cloud environment to be impacted by an attack that wasn't even directed at me?
That's the downside of multi-tenancy. While those hypervisor walls and other security measures work hard to isolate tenants, a sophisticated attack on the CSP's infrastructure could potentially impact everyone sharing those resources.
So it's like an apartment fire. Even if I didn't start it, my unit could still be damaged.
Exactly. It underscores the importance of that initial due diligence we talked about when choosing a CSP. You want a provider with a strong security track record and a robust incident response plan.
That's a great point. Speaking of potential attackers, the source material also mentioned insider threats from CSP employees. That's a little unsettling, isn't it? The idea that someone within the CSP could potentially access or steal my data.
Yeah, it's a real concern. Think about it. CSP employees have privileged access to the infrastructure and potentially even customer data. They're a high-value target for attackers and a potential risk if they decide to go rogue.
So how do you protect against something like that? Can you ever truly be sure it won't happen?
You can't eliminate the risk entirely, but CSPs can mitigate it through robust internal security controls. Think rigorous background checks, least privilege access, where employees only have access to the information they absolutely need for their job, and comprehensive monitoring systems to detect any unauthorized activity.
Okay, that makes sense. The last cloud-specific risk mentioned in the source material is related to virtualization itself, specifically hypervisor compromise and VM sprawl. We already talked about the hypervisor, but what exactly is VM sprawl?
Imagine you keep creating virtual machines for different projects, but you never clean up the ones you're not using anymore. They just pile up, taking up resources and potentially creating security vulnerabilities. That's VM sprawl.
It's like those abandoned storage units again, just cluttering up the space. and potentially harboring unknown dangers.
Exactly. Those unmanaged VMs might not be properly patched or secured, making them easy targets for attackers. They can also become a management nightmare and even drive up costs.
So effective VM management is crucial to prevent sprawl.
Absolutely. CSPs and customers need to work together on this. Think policies to track VM usage, tools that automate provisioning and decommissioning, and enforce security standards. It's about maintaining order and control in your virtual world.
Okay, so we've uncovered some fascinating and sometimes concerning aspects of cloud infrastructure security. But how do we tackle these challenges head on? The source material outlines some essential security controls, starting with something we've already touched on: due diligence when choosing a CSP.
That's right. Selecting the right CSP is the foundation of a secure cloud environment. It's like choosing a builder for your house. You want to see their portfolio, check references, and make sure they're using high-quality materials. You need to thoroughly vet potential providers, looking at their security certifications, their incident response capabilities, and how transparent they are about their operations.
So security is not just about the technology itself. It's also about the people and processes behind it.
Precisely. It's about understanding the CSP's security culture and their commitment to protecting your data.
Okay, so let's say we've chosen a trustworthy CSP. What's the next step in building a secure cloud environment?
Think layers, like a well-defended fortress. The source material breaks down security controls into several categories, and we'll delve into those next.
Welcome back to the Deep Dive. We're continuing our exploration of cloud platform and infrastructure security. This time, we're focusing on those essential security controls you need to have in place. Remember, it's a layered approach. Think of it as building a fortress within the cloud. Okay, I like that analogy. So we're not just relying on the CSP's security measures. We're adding our own layers of protection. The source material breaks down security controls into several categories, starting with physical and environmental protection, which we discussed earlier. Primarily the CSP's responsibility.
Right. The CSP is the landlord, responsible for the physical security of the data center building itself. But the source material also highlights some interesting points about physical security that are worth considering, even from the customer's perspective.
What kind of things should I be thinking about?
Location, for starters. Where those data centers are located can significantly impact both physical and environmental protections.
So if I'm concerned about earthquakes, I might want to choose a CSP with data centers in areas with low seismic activity.
Exactly. And you'd want to know about their backup power systems in case of outages, their fire suppression measures, and their physical access controls. The source material also mentions the importance of HVAC, heating, ventilation, and air conditioning, in data centers.
Why is HVAC so critical?
Think about it. Data centers generate a lot of heat. Those servers are working hard. And without proper cooling, they can overheat and fail. A well-designed and redundant HVAC system is crucial for preventing downtime and protecting your data.
So when I'm vetting a CSP, I should ask about their HVAC systems and how they ensure redundancy.
Absolutely. You're looking for those multiple layers of protection: backup generators, redundant cooling systems, the works.
Okay. So the physical location and infrastructure of the data center matter, even though I don't have direct control over them. What's next on our security checklist?
Let's talk about system and communications protection. This category dives into the nitty-gritty of securing the systems and networks within your cloud environment.
So things like firewalls and intrusion detection systems.
Those are definitely part of it. It's about creating a secure perimeter around your cloud resources, hardening your systems against attacks, and monitoring for any suspicious activity. Think of it as building a strong wall with watchful guards.
The source material specifically mentions boundary protection as a key aspect of system and communication protection. What exactly does that mean in the context of the cloud?
It's about controlling the flow of information between your cloud environment and the outside world. Imagine a drawbridge that you can raise and lower to control access to your castle. You want to implement firewalls to block unauthorized traffic, intrusion detection systems to alert you to suspicious activity, and other security measures to keep the bad guys out.
So it's like having a border patrol for my cloud environment, checking everyone's passport and making sure they have a legitimate reason to enter.
Exactly. You want to be sure that only authorized users and devices can access your resources. The source material also highlights the importance of denial of service protection.
Denial of service attacks. Those are the ones where attackers try to overload a system with traffic, essentially bringing it to its knees, right?
Right. Imagine a mob of people trying to storm your castle gates all at once. It can overwhelm your defenses and prevent legitimate users from accessing your services.
So what can be done to prevent those digital mobs from causing chaos?
CSPs implement various mechanisms to mitigate denial of service attacks. Think traffic filtering, rate limiting, which controls how much traffic can come from a single source, and specialized DDoS protection services that act like a shield against those attacks.
It sounds like CSPs have a lot of tools in their arsenal to defend against those attacks.
They do. And as a customer, you should inquire about their DDoS protection capabilities when evaluating CSPs. It's a critical consideration.
Okay, so we've talked about physical security, securing the perimeter of our cloud environment, and protecting against denial of service attacks. What's next on our layered security approach?
Let's zoom in on virtualization system protection. Remember, virtualization is the engine that drives cloud computing. It allows multiple tenants to share the same physical infrastructure. But this shared environment introduces unique security challenges, particularly at the hypervisor level.
We discussed the risks of hypervisor compromise earlier. And the source material also mentions something called VM sprawl as a potential vulnerability. Can you remind me what that is and why it's a security concern?
Imagine a storage room filled with boxes. You keep adding more boxes over time, but you never go through and get rid of the ones you don't need anymore. Eventually, it becomes a disorganized mess, and you have no idea what's in half of those boxes.
Okay, I can picture that. So how does that relate to virtual machines?
VM sprawl is essentially the same thing, but with virtual machines instead of boxes. As you create VMs for different projects and tasks, it's easy to lose track of them. They might not be properly patched or secured, making them easy targets for attackers.
So it's not just a clutter problem, it's a security risk.
Exactly. Unmanaged VMs can also consume unnecessary resources, driving up costs and potentially impacting performance.
So what's the solution? How do we keep our virtual world organized and secure?
It requires a combination of policies, procedures, and tools. You need to track VM usage, decommission VMs when they're no longer needed, and automate patching and security configuration to ensure consistency. Think of it as a virtual cleaning crew. That keeps your cloud environment tidy and secure.
Okay, so we've covered the physical and environmental aspects, secured our system boundaries, and tackled the challenges of virtualization. What's the next layer in our security fortress?
Now we're getting into the heart of access control, identifying, authenticating, and authorizing users and devices.
This is where Identity and Access Management, or IAM, comes into play, right? It's about making sure only authorized users have access to the resources they need.
Exactly. And in the cloud, IAM is even more critical because you're dealing with a dynamic environment where users and applications are constantly interacting. The source material emphasizes the importance of granular permissions, which means giving users the bare minimum access they need to do their jobs.
So it's about minimizing the potential damage if an account is compromised or if a user accidentally makes a mistake.
Precisely. The source material calls this the principle of least privilege. It's like giving each employee a key that only unlocks the doors they need to access, not a master key to the entire building.
That makes a lot of sense. What other access control considerations are there in the cloud?
Another important principle is separation of duties. This means dividing responsibilities among different individuals to prevent any one person from having too much power or control. For example, the person who creates user accounts shouldn't be the same person who approves access to sensitive data.
So it's about checks and balances to prevent abuse or mistakes.
Exactly. And the source material also highlights the importance of separating development, testing, and production environments.
Why is that important from a security perspective?
It's all about minimizing the risk of unintended consequences. Let's say you're developing a new feature for your website, and you accidentally introduce a bug that could expose sensitive data. If your development environment is connected directly to your production environment, that bug could go live and cause serious problems.
So it's like having separate labs for different experiments. If something explodes in one lab, it doesn't take out the whole building.
You got it. Separating environments helps contain risks and ensure the integrity of each stage of development and deployment.
Okay. So we've got least privilege, separation of duties, and separation of environments. Any other key takeaways about access control in the cloud?
The source material emphasizes the importance of multi-factor authentication, or MFA.
MFA. That's where you need more than just a password to log in, right? Like a code from your phone or a fingerprint scan.
Exactly. It adds an extra layer of security, making it much harder for attackers to compromise accounts, even if they've stolen a password. Think of it as adding a deadbolt to your door, even if someone has managed to pick the lock.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've established strong access controls. What's the next layer in our security fortress?
Now it's all about making sure we're keeping a watchful eye on everything happening within our cloud environment. That's where audit mechanisms come into play.
Auditing? That sounds a bit like accounting. But for security, am I on the right track?
You're close. It's about systematically tracking and reviewing activity within your cloud environment to ensure that everything is running as it should be and to detect any potential security issues. Think of it like security cameras and motion detectors for your digital assets.
So what kind of things are we auditing?
User activity is a big one. You want to know who's logging in, when they're logging in, what they're accessing, and what changes they're making.
And how do we track all of that? Do we have to sit there and watch logs scroll by all day?
Fortunately, no. Cloud providers offer tools that can automate a lot of the auditing process. The source material mentions log aggregation as a key capability. This involves collecting logs from various sources within your cloud environment and bringing them together into a central location for analysis.
So instead of having to check multiple security cameras separately, we have a central monitoring station where we can see everything in one place.
Exactly. It gives you a comprehensive view of activity across your systems and makes it much easier to identify patterns and anomalies that might indicate a security issue.
That sounds incredibly helpful. But even with a central monitoring station, we still need someone to be watching those screens, right?
Absolutely. Log analysis is a critical part of cloud security. You need to have processes and tools in place to analyze logs regularly and to alert you to any suspicious activity. It's like having a security guard who knows what to look for and who can raise the alarm if something seems out of place.
The source material also mentioned something called packet capture as an auditing technique. What is that, and how does it differ from log analysis?
Packet capture is a more granular approach to monitoring network traffic. Imagine being able to intercept and inspect every letter that comes in and out of your castle. It can be a valuable tool for security investigations, but it's also important to use it responsibly and to comply with any privacy regulations.
Since it's a powerful tool.
Yeah.
But it needs to be used with care.
Exactly. And not all CSPs allow packet capture in their environments. So it's something you should ask about during the selection process, if it's a requirement for your organization.
This has been an insightful look at some of the key security controls for protecting cloud infrastructure. It's amazing how many layers there are to consider. We've covered physical security, system and communication protection, the challenges of virtualization, access control, and auditing mechanisms.
And those are just some of the critical aspects of cloud security. It's an ongoing process of assessment, implementation, monitoring, and refinement.
Now let's shift our focus to another crucial aspect of cloud security: how organizations can leverage the cloud for disaster recovery and business continuity. Stay tuned as we explore how to build resilience and ensure your business operations stay afloat even when the unexpected happens. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. So far, we've built a pretty solid security fortress around our cloud environment. But what happens when disaster strikes? Let's talk about how organizations can leverage the cloud for disaster recovery and business continuity.
Yeah.
Essentially, having a backup castle ready to go.
Yeah, the cloud has really changed the game when it comes to disaster recovery and business continuity. Its scalability, flexibility, and geographic redundancy make it a powerful tool for keeping your business running, even when things go wrong.
That's what we like to hear. But the source material points out that some organizations are hesitant to put their critical systems and data in the hands of a third-party provider. It's a control issue.
Right, that's a valid concern. You're essentially handing over responsibility for critical assets to someone else, but with the right planning, due diligence in CSP selection, and clear service-level agreements, you can address those concerns effectively. It's about establishing a partnership built on trust and well-defined expectations.
So it's not just a blind leap of faith.
Not at all. It's about knowing what you're getting into, vetting your CSP thoroughly, and having clear contracts in place to ensure they meet your security and availability requirements.
The source material also mentions the opportunities and challenges presented by the geographic dispersion of CSP data centers. Can you explain that a bit further?
Imagine having multiple castles spread across the land, each with its own defenses and resources, if one castle is attacked or falls victim to a natural disaster. You can move your operations to another castle, minimizing downtime and ensuring continuity. That's the power of geographically dispersed data centers.
That's a great visual, but wouldn't that also mean having to consider the disaster risk profile of each region, where those data centers are located?
Absolutely. You need to understand the potential threats in each region, whether it's earthquakes, hurricanes, floods, or even political instability. And you need to ensure that your CSP has appropriate safeguards in place to mitigate those risks.
So it's about diversifying your risk across multiple locations, but also understanding the unique challenges of each location.
Precisely. It's about strategic planning and risk management.
Now let's talk about downtime, which is a major concern for any organization, regardless of whether they're using the cloud.
Yeah. Downtime is the enemy of business continuity. It can disrupt operations, damage your reputation, and lead to significant financial losses. The cloud, however, offers powerful tools for minimizing downtime and ensuring high availability. Think of it as having multiple layers of redundancy built into your castle walls.
The source material mentions availability zones and automatic failover. Can you explain how those work and why they're so important for preventing downtime?
Availability zones are like separate wings within your cloud castle, each physically isolated but connected to the others. If one zone goes down, your operations can be automatically shifted to another zone, ensuring continuous operation.
So even if one part of the castle is compromised, the rest can still function.
Exactly. And automatic failover is the mechanism that makes this seamless transition possible. It's like having a system of secret passages that allow you to move quickly and discreetly between different parts of the castle if one area becomes unsafe.
That's incredibly clever. It sounds like the cloud offers a lot of built-in resilience.
It does. But it's important to remember that you still need to architect your applications and systems for high availability. You can't just assume that the cloud will magically take care of everything.
So even with all these great tools, it's still up to the customer to design their systems with resilience in mind.
Exactly. It's a shared responsibility, just like security in general.
Speaking of shared responsibility, the source material also talks about compliance as a potential risk in the cloud environment.
Yeah, compliance is a complex and ever-changing landscape. And it's crucial to ensure that your cloud solutions meet all applicable regulations and standards. This includes data privacy laws, industry-specific regulations, and your own internal security policies.
It specifically mentions data sovereignty laws as a key concern. Can you remind me what those are and why they matter in the cloud context?
Data sovereignty laws dictate where certain types of data can be stored and processed. Some countries have strict regulations about transferring sensitive data across national borders. It's like having different laws and customs in different parts of your cloud kingdom. You need to make sure you're playing by the rules of each region where you store or process data.
So it's not just about choosing a CSP with data centers in a particular geographic location. It's also about understanding the legal framework surrounding data in that location.
Precisely. Compliance is a crucial part of cloud adoption planning. You need to factor it in from the beginning to avoid running into problems down the road.
Okay, so we've talked about the high-level concepts of disaster recovery and business continuity in the cloud, but what about the practical steps involved in creating and implementing a plan? Where do we even begin?
The source material lays out a solid roadmap for developing a comprehensive plan, and it starts with conducting a business impact analysis. Or BIA.
A business impact analysis. What exactly does that entail?
Think of it as a risk assessment for your entire business. You're identifying your critical business processes, assessing the potential impact of disruptions, and figuring out which systems and data are absolutely essential for your business to function. It's like mapping out the vital organs of your business and determining how much damage they can withstand before it's game over.
So it's about understanding what's truly mission critical. And what can be put on hold for a while if necessary.
Exactly. The BIA helps you prioritize recovery efforts and set realistic recovery objectives.
The source material also talks about system prioritization. Can you explain that a bit further?
Once you've identified your critical systems and data through the BIA, you need to figure out which ones need to be restored first to get your business back up and running as quickly as possible.
So, for example, my authentication system might be top priority. Because no one can access anything else until they can log in.
That's a great example. Authentication, core networking, and critical data storage are often at the top of the list. It's about understanding the dependencies between systems and figuring out the order in which they need to be brought back online.
The source material also mentions the potential challenges of legacy systems in a disaster recovery scenario.
Yeah. Legacy systems, with their outdated hardware, software, and often poor documentation, can be a real headache to recover. Migrating them to the cloud can streamline disaster recovery and potentially reduce risks.
So moving to the cloud can actually make disaster recovery easier, even for complex legacy systems.
In many cases, yes. The cloud offers a modern, flexible, and scalable infrastructure that's well-suited for disaster recovery. Plus, you can take advantage of cloud-based backup and recovery services, which can simplify the process and reduce costs.
That makes a lot of sense. So we've done our business impact analysis, prioritized our systems, and considered the cloud's advantages for legacy systems. What are the actual steps involved in creating, implementing, and testing a cloud-based disaster recovery plan?
It starts with plan creation. You're documenting the recovery procedures, defining roles and responsibilities, and establishing communication protocols. Think of it as creating a detailed playbook for how to handle a disaster. Everyone needs to know their role, who to contact, and what steps to take.
So it's like a fire drill for the cloud.
Exactly. But instead of practicing how to evacuate a building, you're practicing how to recover your systems and data.
Okay, so we've created our playbook. What's next?
Implementation. This is where you put the plan into action. You're setting up the necessary cloud infrastructure, configuring backup and recovery systems, and training your team on their roles and responsibilities.
And then the most important part, testing.
Absolutely. You can't just create a plan and assume it will work when you need it. You need to test it regularly to make sure it's effective. Identify any gaps or weaknesses, and ensure that everyone knows what to do in a real disaster scenario.
The source material mentions different types of tests, from tabletop exercises to full cutover tests. Can you walk me through those?
Tabletop exercises are like simulated disaster scenarios where your team walks through the plan step by step, discussing their roles and responsibilities. It's a low impact way to test the plan and identify any areas that need improvement.
So it's like a dress rehearsal for a disaster.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then you have more advanced tests, like simulations and parallel tests, where you actually start to activate parts of your recovery plan and see how they work in a controlled environment.
And the full cutover test is the ultimate test, right?
That's right. It involves actually switching over to your backup systems and simulating a real disaster. It's the most disruptive type of test, but it also gives you the highest level of confidence that your plan will work when you need it most.
It sounds like testing is an ongoing process, not just a one-time event.
Absolutely. You should regularly test and refine your disaster recovery plan to ensure it remains effective and up to date. The cloud environment is constantly changing, so your plan needs to adapt as well.
This has been an incredible deep dive into cloud platform and infrastructure security. We've covered a lot of ground, from the core concepts of the shared responsibility model and the design of a secure data center, to the importance of risk analysis, the power of the cloud for disaster recovery and business continuity, and the implementation of robust security controls.
Yeah, it's a complex and constantly evolving field, but the key is to approach it strategically with a focus on continuous learning and improvement.
Well said. Thank you for sharing your expertise with us today. And to our listeners, we hope you've gained valuable insights that will help you navigate the exciting and challenging world of cloud security. Stay curious, stay vigilant, and keep learning. We'll be back with more deep dives into the fascinating world of technology and security.